This is Melissa, and today is the 25th of August, 2024. Summer's just flown on by, hasn't it? I hope that you're all doing well. I was on the CTTM Telegram site earlier in the week, and someone had made a comment about the rapidity of change that we've observed since the beginning of 2020, and the fact that it is accelerating now and that it will continue to get faster over the next several years. And I believe this to be true. Last week I said that I had posed the question to myself, what would Alan be talking about if he was here? I don't have that answer, but I have been reassessing what I talk about, how I spend my time, what I look at, and what I research, and evaluating the relative importance or relevance of it. And there I have extra demands, personal obligations at this time, so I really want to be focused so that my time is spent in a way that I think is productive. I have decided that I won't do the dynamic independence chats, which were scheduled to be twice a month, and I've really enjoyed. I always enjoy the opportunity to talk about Alan's work, and it's not like someone is, you know, it's not like they're banging down the door to talk to me. So whenever I have an opportunity to talk about Alan and talk about things that I think are important, I want to take it. But again, I'm in this just reassessing how I spend my time. Wanted to mention that the next book club discussion on a chapter 11, is scheduled for this next Saturday evening, 7 p.m. UK time, and you can check that against your own time. For me here in Central Standard Time, that is 1 p.m. Saturday the 31st. And Frank, who is delightful and beloved by the book club, is going to be doing a talk on Chapter 11, Changing Economic Patterns. This is a very dense chapter, and Frank has also said that even if he really spends a good chunk of time with us in the group discussing it, he won't have done the material justice, and he plans on recording some and illustrating some podcasts of his own to share with us that will cover the material in further detail. And that's great. It's interesting to me that the book club, each chapter so far has been quite different in the way that it has been covered, and I like the sort of evolutionary process of how it's unfolding. I am encouraging us as readers to stay focused. I would like to get through, we have more than half of the book to cover, and I'm hopeful that we can get through it by the end of February. So I've made an pretty rigorous schedule for myself, and if I can keep to it, I'll try to keep us to it. Prince had suggested that the next book we cover should be Alan Watts' Cutting Through series, and I agree, and I'm kind of eager to get onto that. But we are still learning from Tragedy and Hope, and there are things to learn about this important book, particularly, I think, on techniques. Well, a couple of things that I think are the most important. The first is that there is actually a group of people who have worked together in coordination, what you might call a conspiracy, to plan and implement changes. This Quigley documents quite well. And the second thing that I think is important is that as much as Quigley talks about dates and times and places and so forth, he's still covering techniques. How is that coordination done? So again, Saturday the 31st for Chapter 11. I picked today, a listener suggested talk. I had a few of those this week, and I listened to them, and I, you know, just like last week, I was set to go one way, and then sort of towards the end of the week decided to go a different way. The talk that I have picked is one of the earlier Republic Broadcasting Network talks, so it's November 30, 2007. And I think this was talk number 45. The title is Mapping Your Brain by Video Game, The New Brain Drain. I don't recall now who suggested it, but it was a good idea. Now, one thing, if I have time, I'm going to cut out the... There was an interesting call, which is well worth listening to, from a gentleman who had been a game developer since the early 80s. So this is 2007. So he'd been at it for a while. And he had been involved in, all of you gamers will know, Call of Duty. So this was interesting. He kept, unfortunately, calling Alan Alex. So just to keep us from being distracted, I was going to cut the Alex out. But if I don't have time to do that, there you go. Now, what interested me, as I say, this is the first year that Alan was on RBN full-time. And so I was just scrolling around to see what some of the other talks were. There is one from November 28 called Psycholinguistics and the Art of Mass-Induced Misperception. And then there's one on December 3rd. DARPA gives name of the game. Ultrasound stimulates, controls your sensory cerebral centers. Here's one from December 5 that kind of ties in with what I'm thinking about tonight. Bend over, please. Data collection on the passive masses. And he was reading from an article by Mark Bard entitled Travelers Love Being Scanned. They grow your culture, so pick your cult. Oh, here's one from December 12. Who's been talking in my head? Voice to skull on a street near you. December 17. Exodus from physical slavery to virtual slavery, the surrender of consciousness. Okay, I will stop with that one because essentially this is where my head has been for the past while, the end of consciousness. I've had several discussions with it, and I don't think those will be my last. With Andrea on Real History with Julia JP, I need to keep talking about this from many different angles with different people. Because there is a through line in Alan's work, but his end game, if you will, was the loss of consciousness. He talked about the brain chip. I don't think the chip is off the table at all, but I think that the technology that we're presented with gives us some different ideas of how that kind of control over our consciousness might play out. Just a few other random things that I want to say here because I only have one article that I chose to go up, a new article for this week. A listener wrote to me this week and said that they had a new approach for listening to Alan's talks. They had decided that they wanted to listen starting in late January 2020 and then go in chronological order to Alan's last episode of February 28, 2021. So that would be the first time he discussed that operation up until February 28, 2021. And I thought that this was a fruitful exercise. I really would like to be doing that along with this listener, because that last year plus of Alan's life his work as the talks got longer and longer was so intense. And I know that it was intense for both of us, researching and collating, and it was just a whirlwind that we were on, surrounded by, knowing that, okay, this is it. Why I think this is such a fruitful exercise, and I was thinking, oh, maybe I could do it if I just played it in the background while I'm doing other things, you know, even if I only absorb 50% of the 4 or 5 hour talk. So, as Alan would say, during that time, well, you can always break it up into, you know, 4 hours or 5 individual hours. And so I'm thinking about that, because not only was he talking about this saga as it unfolded, but he was covering technique, and there were a lot of really rich insights as to who is doing this and why. This is beyond depopulation and eugenics. And so I think it's important, as I say, for me, getting into the heart of what matters at this time. I know that talking about politics on a week-in, week-out basis is not something that I want to do. One thing that I think the last 4 years has proven, with a global medical tyranny, is that when it really matters, the nation state is over. Yet were there differences? Did Sweden approach things differently than Germany? Did the U.S. approach things differently than Britain? Was Australia a different strategy than Japan? Yes, there were national differences, but more or less, the net result is that we moved nation by nation in lockstep. So politics is simply not going to be interesting to me going forward. It never was. It wasn't particularly interesting to Alan, although he would cover it from time to time. So I'm laying it out there. If you need to be in that space, there are a lot of people that you can check in with who will be covering the left-right paradigm, but not me. Another thing that popped up on the CTTM Telegram Book Club site this week was a quote from the American economist and social theorist and philosopher Thomas Sowell. If you want to help people, you tell them the truth. If you want to help yourself, tell people what they want to hear. I have been having an exchange of letters with a listener, and she and I were talking about something, and the last letter that I received from her, she was saying, so you're saying that Alan sacrificed for the sake of, you know, in order to bring people knowledge. And I have not replied to that letter yet. I'm seriously so far behind on everything, on communications with people in all ways, and I deeply regret that that is just me and I can't keep up, but I haven't replied to her yet. But no, that is not what I was saying. Alan sacrificed his comforts not to bring people knowledge, but to bring them truth, to bring you truth. Knowledge is just a means. It's a tool. And the acquisition of knowledge is an endless pursuit. There is a passage in the Bible. I actually looked it up when I was thinking about it earlier today. 2 Timothy 3:7. And this is Paul. And the context is Paul was speaking to weak women who were taken advantage of by false teachers. And he said that these women were always learning and never knowing, never able to arrive at a knowledge of the truth. Well, we can think what we will about Paul and what that might mean to us women, but I like the point there. The sentiment of the text is a good one. We're hoping to arrive at truth. So knowledge, whatever we read and how we learn and what we study and where we put our attention, this is important as a tool, but it's the truth that we're hoping to arrive at. I've been thinking so much about Alan and how he thought and what he thought was important and things that he said to me and understanding things, you know, and having these aha moments. I wish I would have understood that more or at all when he was here. Someone again in the book club, and I believe this is Andrea, is responsible for bringing to the attention of those of us who go over to that Telegram site the work of James Tunney. And James Tunney is an Irish artist and writer, and he does some interesting work. And I find that a lot of what he says is complementary to things that Alan said. There are some very key places and ways in which their thinking differs, and I'm only, you know, my love is sharing Alan and Alan's way of thinking and Alan's work. But nonetheless, I am finding the work of James Tunney to be interesting. And I was listening to an interview that he did entitled Mysticism. And he was talking about when people are on a journey for a certain kind of knowledge, this process that there seems to be a similar trajectory for people when they arrive at a certain kind of understanding. How does that unfold? What does it look like? And I'll come back. I'm just going to have a crazy aside here. But earlier today, I was looking at a little video. Don't ask me how I got there, and I don't remember her name. But it was a woman who is an Italist. That is someone who is talking about the diet of Rastafarians, what Rastafarians think is good to eat and drink and not good to eat and drink. But the reason why I was listening to her video is that she was talking about the dangers of opening up your third eye. And again, even that was not, I happened upon it and I listened. It was a short, very, very short video. And she said a couple of things that were quite interesting that I felt to be true. The first was that one of the biggest dangers is that you see things differently. And seeing things differently and being able to share that truth of that perspective with other people makes you dangerous to the powers that be. Because, as Alan would say, you're no longer taken in by the cons. You see for what it is rather than what you're being told that it is. But she said something which reminded me actually of something that Alan said. She had a personal breakdown around the time of this, the beginning of this operation. And I don't know when it was, sometime, but, you know, 2020, 2021. And it changed her. And so what she was doing in her work was wanting to bring her new insights to share with other people. What reminded me of Alan was the breakdown part of it. And it's not that Alan said we should all go have a breakdown. But he remarked to me, and I think he has said this on in talks, in, maybe not quite as on the nose as this, but in other ways, he said that what he has noticed was that often people who arrive at a very deep and intense understanding of truth are broken, have been broken, have gone through something that has broken them. And from that condition, they're able to see things differently. So in this interview that I was listening to of James Tunney, entitled Mysticism, he talked about the person on that journey. He said a man goes into a cave, or maybe away from people in some way, you know, just we'll call it a cave. And he has these experiences and insights. And when he comes out of the cave, he descends in order to share what he has discovered. And to share that, Tunney said what was so important for him was with compassion, that he had a new or renewed compassion for other people. And this is what compelled the mystic or the person who had undergone this change to share. And I think compassion is a key thing. That would be one of the ways in which I would find Tunney's work complementary to Alan's. One of the things that James Tunney has talked about and written about is scientism. And that word, scientism, has been bandied about a lot, so I wanted to give us the definition of the word. Scientism is the view that science and the scientific method are the best or only way to render truth about the world and reality. So that is scientism. Now, longtime listeners, you'll all know that for many, many years, Alan talked about how science was the new religion and scientists were the new priests, the new priesthood of this new religion. So when Alan came out of his cave, so to speak, he didn't talk about the pineal gland and the third eye and mysticism or the spiritual journey, for lack of a word, better word, spiritual. He dealt with facts as they were presented by the planners, the writers, and the implementers of this the agenda. But his sifting and his presentation of those facts was facilitated by his arrival at truth from his own journey. The real history that I have scheduled for this week is, I'm looking forward to it. I was contacted by a woman who told me that she had written 3 articles and she shared them with me, and I read the first and I thought it was good, and I wrote her back and said, would you like to do a real history in which we would cover these articles? And she agreed, and I'm looking forward to it. She's an psychotherapist and academic, a writer, and a self-described dissident from Australia. And I think it will be okay for me to go ahead and tell you that her name is Dr. Petra Buskins, because I would like to post her 3 articles today as well. I only had 1 coming in, but I think that I'll give you a head start on the real history. And it's what we're talking about is kind of important and ties in with my overall thinking of late. So the first article that she wrote that caught my attention, these were all written for the UK column and published in May and possibly into June. The first article was entitled The Paradigm Wars, Part 1, Globocap meets mass formation. And I won't take you through part two and three yet. I will post them, and Petra and I will be discussing this for the real history that goes up on Thursday. But we had a little bit of an email back and forth about this, about the articles, and particularly about the first, because I understood, I had an awareness, in fact, I actually had a personal involvement, which I won't get into right now, but a personal involvement with one of the people in this Tempest in a Teapot that she writes about in part one. She's introducing in the article, The Tempest in the Teapot, that took place over the book published by Matthias Desmet, The Psychology of Totalitarianism. She basically tells us there's two camps here. There's the Globocap, that's the people who believe that it's a top-down power structure of new normal totalitarianism. And the other camp are those that espouse mass formation, the bottom-up mass psychological Milgram experiment, which we saw play out during the last, you know, during that operation. Now, as a total aside here, Alan always thought that he was the person who first coined and used the term new normal and new normals. And it was interesting, when he started using that term, we would see it come back from larger publications, mainstream newspapers, etc. So it's in the mainstream now. But when I was having this exchange of emails with Petra, I said that I was aware of the argument, that I knew some of the players involved in the argument, and that this all happened after Alan's passing, but I said I felt that there was a third explanation that would have been Alan's, the way of the individual and individual responsibility. I was certainly not planning on reading Desmet's book, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, in preparation for this talk with Petra. But I was reading something that she wrote, and she said that some people who were criticizing Desmet's article had actually never read his book, that she had read it twice, once on her own and once in a book club. And I thought, well, I've got 2 days before I talk to her on Monday. Can I read the book? Is it available online? Because I'm certainly not going to order it. I mean, it wouldn't arrive if I did order it. And sure enough, I found that there's a PDF. And so I actually read halfway through the book today. It's not a huge volume. And what I found was that there was much in there that I felt that Alan would agree with. And I also saw the writing as good. It's good writing. And there's something very human and compassionate and empathetic in the way that Desmet presents his ideas. And I know that some of you listeners out there who were telling me ages ago to read the book are going, she'll read it for Petra. She wouldn't read it for me. So sorry about that. It's always time with me. But I still felt my first assessment was right, that there is truth in the book, that there is something in the explanation, that there are things that make sense and that apply, but I'm still going with Alan's way of the responsibility of the individual. The trouble is, we're not all individuals. It used to make Alan laugh a lot in the Monty Python movie, The Life of Brian. When Brian goes to the window, the angry mob is down there. They're waving the shoe. The shoe has, it's like the mask of the biblical times being portrayed in the movie. and they're fighting amongst themselves about what did Brian really mean and how can we interpret the sayings of Brian. And he said, why can't we all just get along? We're all individuals, aren't we? And one man in the mob goes, I'm not. And that made Alan laugh, because in truth, the mass mind has always been with us. This is the truth. Individuals are not as common as we would like to think that they are. But in Desmet's book, somewhere around page 45, I've got it here on the PDF, I'm going to find it. He's, and also another way in which I think that Desmet's book, there are thoughts, there are currents there that Alan would have agreed with, and there definitely I see currents there that mirror some of James Tunney's writing. Now, Desmet, when he is talking about science, real scientific inquiry and the real scientific mindset, he calls that, I believe, big science. This is real science. So there's big science, and then he calls it little science. But I don't think that he uses the word scientism at all. But when he's writing about little science, it really is scientism. So what is the definition of scientism again? The view that science and the scientific method are the best or only way to render truth about the world and reality. This view of the world, that scientific view of the world, Alan would not have agreed with, because when Alan went into his cave to seek truth, he did not do it with a measuring tape, a ruler, a Bunsen burner, some scales, a microscope. No. There are other ways to arrive at truth and reality. So Desmet writes, why is mankind so hopelessly seduced by the mechanistic ideology? Partly because it's under the influence of the following illusion, that one is able to remove the discomforts of existence without having to question oneself at all. That is incredibly powerful, so much so that I will read it again. Why is mankind so hopelessly seduced by the mechanistic ideology? Partly because it's under the influence of the following illusion, that one is able to remove the discomforts of existence without having to question oneself at all. This is best illustrated by modern medicine. The cause of suffering is typically traced to a mechanical defect in the body or to an external entity, such as a pathogenic bacterium or virus. Its cause is localized and can, in principle, be controlled, managed, manipulated, without the patient having to wrestle with any psychological, ethical, or moral complexity. This pill helps you get rid of your problems, etc. I always am reminding us that we have to look in the mirror, that Alan said, look in the mirror. And there are a few things, speaking of complementary ideas, and Alan saw eye to eye with William Bill Cooper in a lot of ways. Someone sent me a couple of clips of Bill Cooper's this week, and I'm going to play one for you right now about the man in the mirror.
Okay. But first, we have to understand history. We've got to. If we don't understand history, if we don't understand symbology, if we don't understand race and religion, you cannot possibly understand what's happening today or why, who's bringing it about, and what you can do to combat it. It's absolutely impossible. And a lot of people think they can, but they can't. And I'll give you an example of how you can't. Isn't it true that most Americans have been spending a lot of time for a lot of years trying to figure out who in the hell is destroying this country? Haven't they? Well, if you've been spending all that time, what's your answer? Logically, from what you yourself have discovered, not what I've told you up here. The answer is you still don't know, right? Isn't that correct? You look around for the enemy and you can't find the enemy. It's because you haven't looked in the mirror. And that's the truth. You've looked everywhere, except right here. I've searched my entire life to find the devil, and I finally found him. You know where he is? Right here. And I can let him take over, or I can cast him out. But he doesn't exist anywhere else.
And there was another one that this person sent, which I'm not going to play for you, because these are the differences between Alan and Bill Cooper. Alan was cosmopolitan. He was of the entire world in his thinking. And Bill Cooper was very much an American. And I definitely think that where we are, you know, Bill Cooper died in 2001. And he was killed in 2001. And I think that we're way past talking about nations, at least I am. I think that one of the reasons why I wasn't really interested in investigating Desmond's book, I saw the arguments summed up. There's a third way here. There's a different explanation for what is happening. But it was also who was presenting Desmond and how by whom was he presented? In what context? The by whom was Robert Malone on the Joe Rogan show. So right there is like, yeah. And then after that, Tucker Carlson brought him on. So again, who is making the presentation and why? There's something that I saw on a Substack. I don't remember whose it was, but it was earlier today, and they said, the real Anthony Fauci book and movie may be one of the most sophisticated psyops I can even imagine. And that really struck me. Because who wrote the real Anthony Fauci? Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So, who is making the presentation and why? A couple of questions I like to ask myself when material is presented. So, the latest thing this week in politics that I said I wouldn't be talking about is that RFK Jr. dropped out of the presidential race and is now endorsing Trump. Trump of Operation Warp Speed. Trump, who had nothing but praise for the deliverables. Yes, did Trump knock Fauci every once in a while? Absolutely. But, right? Now, I recall that at one point, RFK Jr. called out Donald Trump for making his $1 million contribution to the Pfizer company, the Phi, may have to edit that one, and then killing the Vaccine Safety Commission. Who has been supporting RFK Jr. from the very beginning, from way before RFK announced a political ambition? Robert Malone. Okay? So, who introduces us to key concepts? Who says what we should and shouldn't be looking at, what the official narrative is? Now, some journalists, I can think of two right now, that do a lot of writing for RFK's Children's Health Defense. Do we want our children's health defended? Absolutely. But the latest thing being talked about is that RFK Jr. Will be appointed, if Trump wins, the health secretary. And already now RFK Jr. is making speeches on the dangers of seed oils and those forever poisons in the water and food supply. These are important stories. Absolutely. It's just, gatekeeper is not a bad word to describe people who appear to be speaking for you. Gatekeeper is not a bad word to describe people who appear to be authorized to speak for you. They feel your pain and they fight for truth so you don't have to. So I think a lot of you aren't going to like to hear this, but I go back to Thomas Sowell's quote, if you want to help people, tell them the truth. If you want people to help you, tell them what they want to hear. I think that nation states are more or less empty husks. And so the electoral process that holds them up, we've already been shown how corrupt it is, how it doesn't work. I think that that process is now meaningless. And so I have to focus increasingly on the things that I think are the core issues. So I got a little book. It was a $9.99 pamphlet of reflections on the revolution in trance. And this is, I think it was published in 2021. It's called Empire of Scientism by James Tunney. And he wrote on page 19, we are encountering a present and facing a future involving permanent cultural revolution in a transition and likely end of humanity. I return, as I so often do, to a quote from Allen's book that I have shared with you many times, and I'll keep sharing, page 5, volume 1. This is not a rehearsal. This is the final phase of humanity as we know it. Sound shocking? Then go back to your television, your television, and continue your programming. Your faith in this system creates your fate. Those who have no aversion to thinking, persevere, and you will be rewarded. So, politics is part of the system. If you've got faith in that, well, that's where you've put your faith. I want to share a little bit of a story here that I think ties in with what Alan is talking about in this Redux. As mind reading technology improves, Colorado passes First in Nation law to protect the privacy of our thoughts. CBS News, this is late June of this year. If you think telepathy or mind control is the stuff of science fiction, think again. Advances in artificial intelligence are leading to medical breakthroughs once thought impossible, including devices that can actually read minds and alter our brains. Dr. Sean Pazowski, a neurologist at UC Health Pudra Valley Hospital, says there are now about 30 neurotechnology devices for sale on the internet, including Emotive, which he says is the first commercial-grade brain-to-computer interface. Anything you want to do, you can move your computer with your mind and you can control it with your mind using this device. Pazowski says the technology is revolutionizing healthcare and enabling people who can't move or speak to communicate with just a thought or expression. You could use this device to move the cursor to the letter that you wanted, and then, if you wanted that letter, you could just smile and give the command to enter that. Most of the devices sell for $200 to $400 and work by peering into your brain and, in some cases, altering it. Pazowski showed us a headband called Somni, which had sensors that send small electrical pulses into the brain, so it is actually modulating and stimulating your brain to help you get a better night's sleep. He says neurotechnology promises to not only improve brain function, but also identify impairments. That's right, because it is always there to help us. UC Health says it's there to detect epileptic seizures as they happen. Yep. Because they're there to help. That is 2024. And then Alan read this article from 2007, which I mentioned, the game's helmet that reads minds. Think carefully before you answer. Is a device that is capable of reading people's minds fact or fantasy? We knew you'd say that. But scientists at an American laboratory have been brainstorming the same question for more than 5 years, and they've come up with a mind-blowingly different answer. They call it Epoch. But when it is launched early next year in Britain and the U.S., it will probably be known simply as the mind-reading helmet, capable supposedly of knowing what users are thinking. So that's 2007 as opposed to the one that I just read from, 2024. Before I leave you with Alan's talks, I'm going to put in a song that I came across. I was looking at some music online earlier this week, and I found a song that was written in 1840 by Stephen Foster. And Stephen Foster is sometimes considered the father of American music. And this song is entitled, Hard Times Come Again No More. The people who are doing it, it's a new band, so there are our contemporaries who have recorded this song, and it's really nice. So remember, as you go about your week, that discomforts have been with us forever. I don't think we can vote our way out of it. The attempt to escape them makes us complicit and the creation of totalitarian utopias and their inevitable horrors. This music video was made a couple of years ago, so sometime in 2022, according to where I found it on YouTube. And I thought that there was something really beautiful about watching the people in the video, it's on a video, slowly gather, starts off with one guy and his banjo, and then more people coming. And so they're gathering together as if perhaps coming out of a lockdown. They're touching, they're smiling at one another, they're laughing, they're talking, and they're dancing. And this was a music video, but it looked like in real life. And I think that's what we're all still, those of us who want freedom and consciousness, we're trying to hang on in real life. Take care.
Pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow if a poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. While we seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay, there are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their fleeting looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. times come again no more. There's a pale weeping maiden who toils her life away with a worn heart whose better days are o'er. Though her voice would be merry, 'tis sighing all the day. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door.
I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on November the 30th, 2007. Newcomers, look into my website, cuttingthroughmatrix.com, and download as much of the free talks as you wish, and pass them around to other people. And also, for those who speak in the various tongues of Europe, look into alanwattsentinel.eu. For transcripts you can download in the various languages which are used in the world today. And there's more to get added to that too shortly. Now, I've been giving people basically almost history lessons, including what's been happening in recent history that's not in the major media, because the major media has a job to do, and its job is to steer you, to guide you into a type of planning, a planned future, really, that's what it is. A planned future which they keep fairly quiet about, but it was designed a long time ago, in fact, by very big foundations and organizations intermeshed with high governmental bodies and your secret services, those characters who run about spying on people and so on, but they're really the guys who take care of them, who look after them at the top, because you must always try and hold on to power. And that's what it's all about, is holding on to power and ensuring that the same people who have power today can pass it on to their own grandchildren down the road. That's how it's done, because society just doesn't evolve. And we can go into the history of this when we read the big writers that came out after World War I, and science fiction began to get pushed heavily for the first time. In the 1800s, science fiction was being funded by foundations and often backed by people like Rothschild family in England, who paid authors to write along certain lines that would steer the thinking of people, so that eventually, when these things actually happened in life and became part of culture, things they thought were impossible at one time, they'd adapt to it very quickly, thinking it was quite a natural progression. And that's called predictive programming. It was taken over by the high establishments of Britain and heavily funded since World War I. And it still is today. And shortly I'll be reading a book that is published, probably the first one of its kind, which goes into the culture creation industry, admitting that the CIA and MI5 and 6 and other organizations gave us the whole culture of the 20th century. They funded all sides of cultures, of political parties, and steered us to where we are today. Now, whenever anything is released to the public to buy, to purchase, to use at home, it's technically obsolete. And yet we've taught this is the latest gadget, whatever the gadget happens to be. I've gone into the video games, for instance, and I've asked you to think why on earth would games that were designed for the military establishment be so heavily funded, incredibly heavily funded by government institutions, using your tax money to bring out more and more vicious games and to make children want to enter, to really want to enter a different world of reality. I'll be back with much more of this after the following messages. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and we're cutting through this matrix. It's very important we cut through now, because we're going into it big time, and I have a feeling that once into it, most people will be just like the characters in the Matrix movie. They'll think that's real life. They won't know the difference. The transition won't be that gradual enough, but they'll actually go into it. And they're aiming at the young, as I say, always at the young. And in many of the writings put out by Aldous Huxley and others, they talked about creating a world. This wasn't Huxley's idea. He just worked for this establishment that planned this future. But he said that most people are unhappy, therefore we'll make them happy. We'll give them a type of big brother type society where everything's taken care of for them, and we'll use drugs and so on and various scientific methods to control the people and keep them happy, keep them ordered, because the greatest thing they fear at the bottom happens to be independent thinkers. They're not worried about weaponry, because they have such high-tech weaponry at the top, and chemical weaponry and various types of weaponry. They don't worry about weapons at the bottom. Everything they have is obsolete. But they really care about thoughts that can spread like wildfire. That's important. So they want to extinguish those with that fire inside them and bring everybody into a matrix-type society with the use of drugs and psychological techniques and advanced sciences. And here is where the games are going, the games. And this is from the Sunday Times, to do with the virtual reality games. Now remember, as I say, everything that's given to the public went through the military establishments first. Anything that could be used to change or alter society in any way at all in culture is tried, tested, and approved. And when we get it, it's almost obsolete. They're on to the next phase. So this is the Sunday Times, November 25th, 2007. And it's in their news tech and web news gadgets and gaming section. This is by Alex Pell and Christopher Goodwin. It says, think carefully before you answer. It's a device that is capable of reading people's minds, fact or fantasy. We knew you'd say that, but scientists at an American laboratory have been brainstorming the same question for more than 5 years and have come up with a mind-blowing different answer. They call it Epoch. When it is launched early next year in Britain and the US, It will probably be known simply as the mind-reading helmet, capable supposedly of knowing what users are thinking. The device is being hailed as a revolutionary breakthrough in the way that humans will be able to interact with computers. This is the interfacing, or to get everyone trained to go into the interface, but the young will adapt to it very quickly, and then the next bunch will go even further. Its implications are massive, opening the possibility that one day people will be able to control everything from light switches to the cursor on their computer screen by simply thinking about it. Yeah, but they don't tell you that you won't be programming it. Someone will be programming you. However, for now, the technology will be used as the ultimate gimmick to play computer games simply by thinking your screen characters into action. Emotive systems. Now, emotive, it refers to emotion, and there's more to this I'll go into later. The San Francisco company that has developed the technology says Project Epoch could mean the end of joysticks and keyboard bashing. Instead, game players will be able to visualize a move in their head that will move, and that move will be replicated on the screen in front of them. So, for example, Harry Potter could be ordered to cast exotic spells, or a Jedi might exert the Force to fling his enemies around, all through the willpower of the gamer with no buttons pressed. And they go on to tell you more about how this actually works. It's just the fact that such an advanced system has been developed for something as apparently frivolous as computer games should come as no surprise. The industry is one of the most innovative and competitive, with each company attempting to move a step ahead of its rivals. That's nonsense. They all get the same technology at the same time at the top. It's given to them through cutting-edge technology. Witness the success of the Nintendo WII with its wireless computer or controller that reproduces physical movements on the screen and has resulted in a huge sales surge. The industry is also one of the biggest. Sales of computer games and handheld consoles have exploded over the past 5 years, with some analysts predicting it could soon be bigger than Hollywood in terms of turnover. Then they go on and on about the cost and the factors and so on. So how does a helmet work? In simple terms, it relies on the fact that every time a human thinks about something, electrical impulses are triggered in the brain. This has been known for years in the medical world and is the basis of an electrocephalogram, the EEG, the technique that measures the electrical activity of the brain by recording from electrodes placed on the scalp. Now, this is interesting because, you see, there's also another article came out at the same time. This one is using EEG technology, electroencephalographic technology. But what I mentioned about a month ago was that the Pentagon and the British counterpart had also set up virtual worlds with every human being that's registered in these virtual worlds. And they're gathering data on your personality. Now, here they're going a step further. They'll get much, much more. They'll get your brain pathways, etc., how you think as an individual, and that will be added to this virtual world, this matrix they're setting up, you see. And even though this one here is using EEG technology, there's another one coming out, which is using ultrasonic-type technology to go even further and try and record the pathways of your brain as well. Now, that's going into what they call engrams. Engrams are pathways where your memories, etc., are stored. They want a virtual copy of you. That's what's coming. And this is what all this is for. It's nothing to do with them using little Johnny. It's about getting to know little Johnny better than he knows himself, and to create a duplicate world which one day most people will all be in without knowing it eventually. It says here, Emotive claims to have refined the technique to isolate and identify the electrical patterns that are given off when humans think about a given course of action, such as moving their arm to the left or right, or depressing the right thumb or index finger. The Epoch helmet recognizes these electrical patterns and translates them into real movements on the screen. Now, that was done about 8 months ago, if you remember, that DARPA. Now, DARPA is not there to help you. DARPA is a big part of the National Security Agency. and to do with Homeland Security, and they give a PR blurb out on the media when they said they'd put a chip in a paraplegic's brain that allowed him to send emails to people by simply thinking about it. So here you've got, there's no competition here. Everything's already done at the top and dished out to the ones down below. It says, to look at the helmet resembles nothing so much as a novelty head massage gadget with several spidery arms curving around the head and meeting at the top. The arms are fitted with a total of 16 sensors positioned so they are in contact with the relevant part of the head and pick up electric signals in the brain. The system's software analyzes these signals and then wirelessly relays what it detects to a receiver plugged into the USB port of the game console or PC. The motive says it's mapped 12 specific actions that the helmet will recognize and can be reproduced in standard games. Now, you know that back in the 90s, in 95, I think it was announced in all major media, definitely here in Canada, that all communication devices, phones, faxes, computers, and so on, had to be accessible at all times, be made to be so by the manufacturers, to be accessible at all times by the security agencies, your governmental security agencies. And there's no firewall sold to the public or any other gadget that will stop them having access. They're built that way with back doors in them. And you can bet and take it to the bank, as long as they're open, that they're going to store all the data on a whole generation of children who are growing up and have a complete personality profile put into this matrix system they've already put up and built and have operating, and they'll know, as I say, little Johnny better than Johnny knows himself. Predictive programming indeed, because for total control in the world, everyone must be completely predictable, getting to know you indeed. So that's the world we're going into at a gallop, not by chance, not because they want to entertain you, not just for bucks at all, no. It's to control a society, to do with control. An ongoing, never-ending journey where man is the material, the base material, which can be remade and perfected and used as the masters see fit. That's what it's all about. Long, long-term agenda. It's interesting that Huxley and others talked about this coming world, and movies were made about it, where they showed you the interfacing. In the Star Trek series too, they had the Borg there, and from adults' points of view, the Borg were horrific creatures, robotic creatures in a spaceship they called the Hive. The Hive, by the way, has been used in the military to talk about the general public. All public locations where people live, habitat areas, are called hives in the military now, and they get documentation when their base, they're in an army base, as to where to go in the Hive general population for libraries and so on. And I'll be back with more of this after the following messages. Hi, I'm Alan Watt, and we're cutting through a matrix which is surrounding us all the time, step by step. And one day people will think they wake up. It'll be in a different world. They won't notice it, most of them, because they've been brought up with the fantasy of it. Now they live the fantasy, thinking they're in a real world. And they'll do real jobs in a physical world. They could be doing something rather nasty, like cleaning out a barn or something. But they'll think they're on the moon with James Bond and Skywalker or something like that. That'll be the fantasy in their head. As I was saying before the show, before the break there, that this was shown, as I say, that the Borg mentality was shown in the Star Trek series, and they had the cyborg characters as Borgs, where they had, they were part machine but mainly human, and they were all interconnected to a centralized queen or computer, a mind and they called it the hive. The whole ship was called the hive. That's what they're bringing into play. Now, if they can map your psychomotor patterns for you, the uniqueness that is you, remember, they can then reverse that flow and command your brain to act in certain ways, and you will get up and walk, maybe walk to where they tell you to walk to, maybe walk into a police cell and sit down, and you won't even know you've done it. And that's where it's all going, you see, the controlled society. Quite something. And people will flow into this without even noticing. Most of them won't notice. Many will actually enjoy it because they enjoy entertainment, enjoy fantasy. And they won't be able to tell the difference anymore. They're almost at that stage today. Now, Huxley, Aldous Huxley, in 1961 said, and it seems to me perfectly in the cards that will be within the next generation or so, a pharmacological method of making people love their servitude and producing a kind of painless concentration camp for entire societies, so that people will in fact have their liberties taken away from them, but will rather enjoy it, because they will be distracted from any desire to rebel by propaganda, brainwashing, or brainwashing enhanced by pharmacological methods. That kind of ties in with a statement that Mr. Rockefeller made when he talked about coming catastrophes and so on. And when he was asked about the people, how will they behave? He says, they'll come to us. They'll come to us with perfect docility. Absolutely certain that they would. And no wonder, because we're all being drugged at the moment with all the spraying, and we're getting dumbed down by a thousand different methods that the general public are unaware of. Now, we've got Dan from California on the line. Are you there, Dan?
Hello, hello.
Hello. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Boy, it's great to talk to you. And, you know, your subject is right on. I'm a video game developer from California. And when I started at Atari back in the 80s, we always used to joke because Atari was right across the street from Lockheed Missiles and Space.
Coincidence, eh?
And, you know, we made games like Missile Command and Battle Zone. And we always used to joke that, you know, there was a secret tunnel between Atari and Lockheed. And if anything ever happened, they just hooked these kids up to these games, and the gamers would control, you know, these devices at Lockheed. You know, we thought it was a big joke.
Yeah.
So the last game that I worked on was Call of Duty 4, right? It's for the Xbox 360. It's one of the biggest games out there. This Call of Duty game, I can't even believe, you know, I'm listening to your show, I'm working on the game, and the game's, you know, a first-person shooter, all takes place in the Middle East, you know, mm-hmm. with all of these overtones, all the overtones and political overtones that you can think of coming from the Middle East.
The propaganda.
And, you know, and just by, you know, and the server that we're working on, the whole game, it's called Huxley 6.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, I couldn't believe it. And just before the game starts, on each of the intro levels, they have little quotes. And quotes from who? Bertrand Russell,
yep.
Plato. You know, I'm surprised they didn't throw in Albert Pike. You know,
oh, he'll come. He'll come down the road. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm listening to your show, working on this game. And as we're working on this game, we're getting a parade of these politicians coming through.
Yes.
The mayor of Los Angeles, you know, the governor, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's coming to the company to see how the game is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a game. It's, but, you
it's
know,
very important. It's very important to the ones at the top, and it's not the only company that's giving me information. They're doing this to all the major ones because they're all, they don't know it, but they're all working together. They're all working together because information is fed to higher levels and then fed down to you.
Well, I never wanted to believe this. I always defended video games, that they were outside of this, of the control of that system. You know, but this last game, I mean, parts of the game just made me sick to my stomach. You know, playing it triggers all of those psychopathic, you know, psychological triggers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't get points for staying alive. If you just survive, you don't get points. You get points if you kill.
Yeah.
You know, it's designed this, and, you know, just the effects of the game was just, you know, it was just wild, you know.
Yes.
Anyway, you know, I was so shocked, you know, making this game and listening to your show. And I bookmarked your, you know, Cutting to the Matrix show on all the computers at the, you know, at the development company. I won't say the name, but everybody knows Call of Duty. If they're listening to your show, you know, they're going to be, you know, affected by that game. And I guess my question is, you know, you get all this stuff coming at you.
Yeah, hang on, and we'll finish this after the next break.
Thanks.
Hi, folks. Alan Watt back with Cutting Through the Matrix, and we're talking to Dan from California, who's involved in making you some of these types of games, and you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, I guess the question is, you know, I've been listening to the show for a while, and everybody calls in. You know, you have all this information about everything that's coming down. It's all true. You know, people ask me, where's the future of video games going? I say, go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and you'll find all about, you know, you'll learn all about the future of gaming. And people want, you know, like, the question is, well, how do we stop this? What do we do about that? Mm-hmm. You know? And as I began to think about that, I thought, okay, well I'm going to study karate, you know, because we got the Blackwater guys moving in right down the street from us.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, okay, well, I got to get my kung fu together. And then thinking, well, these guys got bulletproof vests and M16. You know, you better start going to the firing range, right? So then you start going to the firing range, but, you know, in order to fight these guys, you know, you have to shoot first.
Yeah.
You can't wait to counter shoot.
And see, this has been the problem all down through the ages. You always get the people at the bottom fighting the organized army from the people at the bottom, because they're just the offspring of us, you see, who are trained and brainwashed. And the guys at the top sit back and laugh at this because they don't take part in actual physical stuff. But what they do need, and this is the big trick to everything, they need us to acquiesce to everything they want us to do in the society that they lead us into. And so, in other words, they need our permission. In fact, they want us to be enthusiastic about going into this brave new world. And we've got to start and turn around now in our private lives and start saying no to different things that they demand from us, regardless of how many people in the majority go along with it. Those who have functioning brains have to use them and simply say no. And you'd be surprised how that starts to grow. Most people are followers. I mean, when they see someone standing up and saying, no, that's enough in this particular direction or that direction, then they feel a bit more courageous and they'll change allegiance to those who are standing up and saying no. And that's what we must do in a peaceable way, because they need us to acquiesce to every part of this agenda or they lose it.
Well, that's the big question. You know, how do you fight the psychopath without becoming a psychopath?
You can't just become one, and you must use the traits they don't have. They don't have love for their fellow man, for instance. So you have to be real with yourself. And if you truly feel the caritas, as they call it, for humanity, you must show it and let people know. And
what was that word?
It's all right to show it. It's all, see, the society we've been created has made us isolated, and so we're afraid of showing how we feel about other people. It's time that we regained that and brought it to the surface.
Did you say caritas?
Yeah, it's love for your fellow human, basically.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, it's pretty scary to love one of these Blackwater guys coming through and saying, you got to have the chip.
Oh, I'm not talking about I'm talking about the general public that you want to help, not these guys. These guys are conditioned, and when they've had enough slaughter and all the rest of it, it's only then the shock sets in and they go to pieces. That's what conditioning does. It's very scientifically done to them. They're like robots, and that's why in all the Star Wars movies that you had, the series of Star Wars, they're always portrayed almost like robots. They're faceless numbers. They're just uniform. That's what a uniform is. It's all becomes one. They're not individuals anymore. They're uniformly made. So you've got to bypass them and go to the ones above, and it's the ones who lead them and demand that you give allegiance to this system that you must stand up to. And say, no, we're not going along with this because we know what's happening. These are the guys we must go to. Not the soldier at the bottom has got to be bypassed or you simply have the guys at the bottom fighting the guys at the bottom, as always.
Yeah, you're really starting to go beyond, like, you know, you almost go into spiritual, occultic type of, you know, like a war that's happening, you know, beyond the physical, sometimes, I think, you know?
We're in it. There's more to humanity than at least there used to be for most, than simply the basic instincts. And they can be brought out again in people, too. We see this in times of real disasters, not the man-made ones. People naturally want to go and help each other. They do that naturally because it's a survival instinct. By helping others, you help yourself.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That's the only way with this kind of humane type of, you know, this kind of empathy that you talk about on your show as almost like a weapon against a psychopath.
It is a weapon because what they have tried to do, they've been pretty successful, is to get everyone into a psychopathic culture of dog-eat-dog until we are isolated from everyone else, and we walk past people in the streets without helping them if they fall down. That's the society that's been created, and it's all wrong. It's not human, and it's time that we regained that because we are capable of doing it.
I mean, when I run into these guys, especially these, you know, the politicians coming through with their security guys into my little game company, and they got real guns, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, my shackles go up, you know. And, you know, I want to stop them from hurting people.
Yes, and we've got to do it now before it gets to a stage where they will start hurting people. And that's what we see happening. They've made the superstructure, they're getting everything in place for something they know is coming, step by step, as they unleash a form of hell on us and then offer us the solution. And that's why the Department of Defense in Britain, the top think tank, projected nothing but riots by ordinary people in all countries for the next 20 to 30 years. What on earth do they have planned that's going to cause such chaos? Well, this is a 100 years war, according to Rumsfeld and others, and they plan to have their whole brand new system of the new Borg all complete by the end of that 100 years. So we go to say, no, we're stopping it right now.
Sometimes it makes me sick that I've been part of this. I made these games.
Well, you know, this again is a system we're in. This darn thing called money, they've given people no other way to get through this system without money.
I had to do that to buy your DVD, you know?
People get compromised. People become sharks themselves because they're terrified of poverty. That's what money does in a moneyed system. You're terrified of poverty, and that's what makes you inhumane to your fellow man.
Well, I'm really happy that you have this show. It has the reverse effect of those games. Yeah. When I listen to your show, somehow I calm down, and, you know, I begin to think differently and read differently and...
Yeah, it's deprogramming, and that's what we need, is lots of deprogramming to regain that which we're capable of having. It's innate within us. It's time it woke up and regained its right in this world.
Yeah, anyway, I hope a lot of my co-workers and, you know, are going to your website and looking at it, you know, because, you know, we're in the belly of the beast.
Yes,
you know?
And a lot of people are compromised, and a lot of people are going through problems at the moment with their conscience as they understand what they're actually involved in. Yeah. So
yeah,
thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks.
Bye now. And we've also got Steve in Ontario. Are you there, Steve?
Alan.
Hello, Steve.
Yes, I'm here, Alan.
Yeah, can go ahead.
Good evening. And another example of what I think would be predictive programming. I know you touched on this last weekend. There's a game called Shattered Union, which is forecasted in the future. I think it's probably about 2015 or somewhere around then. And it talks about terrorism in the U.S. and martial law is the theme of the game, and how some of the states seceded from the U.S. Very interesting, just to go to, if you were to search on Shattered Union, and you could see flash videos of the video game. I think it came out about a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's almost like I said, a predictive program of what may be to come,
yeah,
which is interesting. And it may be a game that was released from some of the big game developers.
Yes, before that even came out, some years ago, there was a movie came out. I think Bruce Willis was in it. And I never went to see it because I knew exactly what it would be all about. And sure enough, it was a lockdown of an entire city by the military long before 9/11 came along. And it was getting everyone ready for what was happening today with the military in charge and martial law and all the rest of it. So this is all of these things together are parts of the same predictive programming so that the generations who grow up in it, do you realize that shortly people will, young people will think it's always been this way, that you go into a subway and there's guys there with machine guns and all this and searching people. They'll think that's the natural way because it's all they will know. It's all they will know. And that's why we have to stop this now before that generation gets to that stage. Because once that's happened, the following generation, it will be even easier with them. That will be the natural, being searched and scanned and all the rest of it everywhere you go. And that's what they intend to do. And they're on their way. We've got to stop it now. And it's all predictive programming. That they're giving these games out to the children, getting them ready for it. And they'll think nothing of it. It'll seem quite natural as we go into a totalitarian form of existing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yep, I'm still here, Alan.
Yeah.
I have another question, but it'll steer you off topic, so maybe I'll call in another show.
Yeah, you can go ahead. There's time, I think.
Okay. The three stars pointing to Sirius December 24th.
Yeah.
One thing I would like information on, I've been trying to do my research on this, the rise of the sun, which basically is parallel with the southern crux, which is not seen in the northern hemisphere.
Yeah.
I can't find an accurate answer to that. If you can maybe talk about that in a later show.
Yeah, well, with the three stars of Sirius, and I talked about this 10 years ago, and I know there's even videos out now with that in it, although they got some of it wrong. But that's the three wise men, of course, you see.
Right.
And 2,000-odd years ago, there's a perfect alignment of the three stars, and Venus was there in the middle of the horns of the moon, exactly at midnight on that particular date in December. And that's where that came from. The rest of it is the dog follows, which is Sirius. So the three wise men 2,000-odd years ago were following, it was actually Venus, and that's the belt of Orion. That was the perfect alignment, and it only happens every couple of thousand years. But Sirius follows on, and in Egypt, Sirius heralds the coming of the floods of the Nile that brings life to the land and brings down all the rich soil and its water that nourishes the land all the way from the mountains of Uganda. And so at that time of the year too, Orion would rise, and then Sirius was seen in the morning rising up towards the sun, trying to become bright as the sun, they called it, so they had little allegories about him. And then he was overcome by the sun.
But does the southern crux fit in here, or is this maybe some misinformation that's been out there?
Yeah, and midwinter, remember their winter is a different time, but in midwinter, the sun goes, as usual, east, round southwise to the west again, and in midwinter, it would appear to hang there in the early morning, and you still see the southern cross there. So the god, the sun, the S-U-N, the son of the sun, or S-E-N in Egyptian, would actually hang on that cross for 3 days before, and would never go further to the north and west. And after 3 days, he started moving up again, and that meant that the midwinter was past and life was coming. He was born again.
And sorry, just quickly, where would this be visible when you would see the southern crux?
You would see in parts of below the equator.
Okay, I see.
Below the equator.
Okay, thank you, Alan. That's it.
Okay.
Bye.
So that's the world we live in, where knowledge is hidden. And most people go through their lives having extraneous knowledge, trivial knowledge, and conditioning. And sure enough, as Brzezinski said, their topics of conversation are given to them on the previous night's news. And that's what they talk about at work the following day. They talk about affairs in Hollywood and the stars, not realizing there's whole departments of propagandists just churning this stuff out. It doesn't matter if it's true or not, as long as you eat it up and talk about it. It keeps you from thinking about real things or even your own personal life or what life is or what happiness really is. We're told in a commercial system happiness is having it all, which is an impossibility. In fact, if all these things you buy worked out as the ads tell you, you'd given up buying long ago because you'd be so darned happy. There's nothing. How happy can you become once you're happy and exuberant? You can't go any higher. Now we've got John from Texas on the line. Are you there, John?
Yeah, hi, Alan.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a real quick question I wanted to ask you, and I'm going to hang up and listen.
Yeah.
I heard you say on an old blurb that they may have taken something out of the book, The First Global Revolution.
Yeah.
And then...
On the Google, apparently on Google there's some free books. And
a
caller got in touch with me and noticed that 30 pages were missing. And
wow.
They hadn't even hidden it. They just ended at a certain number and 30 pages on resumed.
Uh-huh.
So be very careful when you look up some of these email
books. Try to get a used copy.
Yeah, you can still get used copy. But understand, when I got mine, I got it used for 75 cents. And whenever I mention books, they suddenly just go shoot up in price as people go and get them. Someone complained they're up to $80 now for a
well,
copy.
I just got Ghost in the Machine. I paid $56 for it.
Really?
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not the money. I mean, I really want to be able to try to convince people. That's why I'm buying all the books that you recommended on all your blurbs.
Yeah.
Because I've been writing them all down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm I'm not checking you out. I mean, I believe what's going on. There's no doubt in my mind about it. No doubt at all.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm looking for good information to put forward put in front of people's faces and say, here, read this.
Yeah.
And my one last question is, and I'm gonna go hang up. And before I do that, I like to say I really appreciate everything you're doing. And my question is. I'm halfway through the book, The Grand Chessboard.
Yeah.
And I was looking for the part where they said they were going to go into Iraq, and then Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, and Syria, and I can't find it. But I'm only halfway through, so.
Yeah, you have to keep going, and you'll find too it's scattered. They don't sit down and you see these things are written for the exoteric and
together.
The esoteric. Yeah. And so
okay.
For the big boys who are involved, you know, it's like reading the Bible. You have to read through all the boring stuff where you're almost falling asleep, and then you catch something mm-hmm. that's important. That's how they write these kind of books, where actual laws or real details are put in there, or you'll find a politician's memoirs or something, or some high bureaucrat. They tuck it in amongst the boring stuff. We'll be back with more after the following messages.
Bye. Take care.
Bye. Hi, Alan Watt with Cutting Through the Matrix. And, yeah, another place to find that the countries that they wanted to go through, if the website is still up, is the little club that was formed by those who are in power right now in the U.S., at least who appear to be in power, and that's the Project for the New American Century, because they also went through different countries they wanted to get involved with, shall we say. In the old British Empire, they used to call them problems, like the Turkish problem and so on. And that's how it's referred to in the writings of today. It's always a problem, a Middle Eastern problem or the Iranian problem, etc. That's what they mean by that. When they have problems, they want to fix those problems, which generally means that they want to take over the entire structural system over there, wherever over there happens to be at that time. And believe you me, the boys who plan ahead the decades and even the century, perhaps, they'll have many wars lined up after that. We're just living a schedule. We're living through a schedule right now as they go through their formula. But they already have their targets after Iran and Syria and so on to standardize the whole planet for peace, you understand, for peace. And then, of course, we'll all be in a little matrix and living in a fantasy world where we are totally predictable, and as they hope, and they know it's true, most folk will enjoy it. Most folk will actually enjoy it as they get gradually led into it. More so when they step up crisis after crisis, because we all need escapism now and then, and we like a little bit of fantasy to escape from the harsh realities of life. The problem with the fantasies they give us is predictive programming, which leads into the next part of real life that they've planned for us. That's the problem. And not so long ago, families used to sit and discuss before the television sets. They'd have little stories to tell each other and things like that. And yet storytellers, and people would communicate with each other, and that was a healthy type of entertainment. Or they'd sing or play an instrument and so on. That's all been changed. If you notice, all entertainment is done by professionals now, outside of your control. And when you get entertained by them, you're actually being programmed by them. And that's cultural creation, as they call it. So I'm very careful about the books I recommend. I try to get it out quickly when I've got another book I'm going to talk about, before the guys who have all these books jack up the prices and really take advantage of the situation. And there are also some groups out there on other radio stations and so on that actually own publication houses where they buy obsolete books. So I try not to go into what they've got to offer, because they really soak you for reprinting these books. When they're obsolete, they don't pay any royalties on them, so they can churn them out. And often they get made in China or India or something for peanuts. And then you pay for it all. Now, for those who want to support me, look at my website, because that's how you keep me going. I don't have a staff here to do all the stuff that most people do. I don't plan my talks. I sit down here 5 minutes before I start, and it just happens to flow, which is the only natural way to be. That, otherwise, I'd be commercialized, and I'd be entertaining you. I'd be in the business. And time is getting short. Now, from Hamish and myself, up in the snowy Ontario, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.